We're doing Parashat Vayechi, and as we always do, we'll quickly go through the parasha, review, outline the parasha, and then try to do more depth. Our parasha records that Yaakov Avinu lived 17 years in Egypt, and then when he was nearing his death in his last year, he called Yosef and asked him to promise him that he would bury him in the Maaseh Machpelah with his father and grandfather in the land of Israel. And he gives him the gift that his two children, Ephraim and Manasseh, will be considered like two tribes in Israel. He's going to have a double portion. And he tells him, you know, your mother, she passed away while I was traveling to Canaan, and I buried her on the way, but I'm asking you, don't bury me near your mother, bury me back in the Maaseh Machpelah. Yaakov blesses the children, and he does a strange thing. He crosses his hands, he makes an X with his hands, puts his right hand to the left and his left hand to the right, so the kids won't realize that he's really putting his right hand on the younger one. And Yosef thinks he's in error. He tries to correct him, and Yaakov tells him, no, I know what I'm doing. And he blesses the children. And he tells Yosef, you're going to have a double portion as though you were firstborn. Yaakov is nearing his death, and he calls his children. And he blesses each one, and we'll go through the blessings, Be'ezrat Hashem. And when he finishes blessing them, he asks them to take him and bury him in the land of Israel, in the Maaseh Machpelah, where his grandparents were buried, and where he buried his parents, where his parents were buried, and he buried Leah. And then he passes away. Yosef falls on the face of his father, and he weeps and kisses him, and then he has his father mummified. And then Yosef tells Paro's house, you know, my father made me promise, I'll take him back, please tell Paro. And Paro says, okay, go like you promised your father. And he goes with a tremendous accompaniment from Paro and the elders. And they all go up from the land of Goshen, but they leave their children and cattle behind. Suddenly, they're not as free to go the way they had been until now. You notice things are changing in Egypt? They're not first-class citizens anymore. Yaakov passed away, and suddenly their eyes are darkened a little bit. Suddenly they realize they're not going to leave Egypt when they wish. And they go up with a huge camp. They eulogize Yaakov. The nations who see them pass join their eulogy. And on their return, the brothers are concerned. Maybe now Yosef will take revenge for what they've done to him. And they say, you know, your father said before he died, tell Yosef, please forgive your brothers. And Yosef starts weeping. And they come and they bow before him. They say, we'll be your slaves. And Yosef says, well, you think I'm going to do something to you? You thought I would do something bad? No, God ensured that things would work out well for all of us. Don't worry, I'm going to take care of you. Yosef gets to see children and grandchildren, and Yosef tells the Jewish people, and with this the book of Bereishis ends. He tells the Jewish people, his brothers, I am dying. Yosef died first among the brothers. And God will redeem you. The book of Bereishis ends with Pakod yifkod el etchem. God will redeem you and take you out of this land as he promised our forefathers. Promise me, when God redeems you, you'll take my bones out. And Yosef passes away, he is mummified, and he cannot leave Mitzrayim anymore. He is placed in the ark in Egypt. And with this, the book of Bereishis comes to a close. We end the book of Bereishis with the hope that will lead us through the beginning of the book of Shemot. So now let's begin Parashas Vayechi with some more depth. We have stages in our life, like the moon that wanes and waxes. Sometimes we're stronger, sometimes we're weaker. A person has to know to take things in stride. And a person has to know that the normal way of life is that, like the sun rises, there's a time where it's getting stronger and stronger, and then it peaks, and then slowly it sets. person has the period of his life, the first 20 years, where when he has to worry about the physical. He has to take care of himself. Every year he's growing, he's getting taller, he's getting stronger. Then he has the years 20 to 40, where he's got his top strength, and he's got to produce. And then he's got the years from 40 to 60 or 70, however long God will give him, where his strength starts to dwindle. And the question is, what has he amassed by the age of 40? In what has he invested his strengths? And that will reflect what happens as his strengths weaken. If he's been an NBA all-star, if he's been a wrestler, so by the age of 40, everyone tells him, go retire, do commercials. Hopefully he'll get commercials. If he's been investing his life in the physical, so then he has to be concerned when he hits the age of 40. But if he's been investing his life in spiritual growth, so then as the body weakens, his mind usually gets sharper. And as a person ages, he has more understanding, he can give better advice, if he's been developing himself in that direction. The greatest sages of the Jewish people reached their all-time high on the day they were going to die, or on the year they were going to die. Because as the body dwindles, so too do the inhibitions, the spiritual inhibitions that the body creates, those two also dwindle. Meaning a person has more control over the physical aspects of life because he's no longer driven like he was in his youth to pursue the materialistic aspects of life. He's not looking in the mirror 10 times a day when he's 45. And if he is, he's got problems. Yaakov Avinu is in the last year of his life. And as such, Yaakov Avinu, who's been growing spiritually throughout his life, has reached an all-time high. And therefore, Yaakov is going to give blessings, and Yaakov is going to reveal knowledge of what will happen till the end of time. Yaakov Avinu is in the last year of his life. He's been building up his whole life. Yeah, building up, part of building up is that there are ups and there are downs. But the curve is always going up, meaning there are dips in the curve, yes. But the general direction is up. Everyone has dips in their curves. Vayechi Yaakov. Yaakov's life was 34 years, the gematria of Vayechi. Until he had a child, life wasn't exactly life. Chazal tells a person who's childless isn't yet alive. And then when Yosef was stolen from before him, and he had to spend 22 years without Yosef, that also wasn't a life. So now that Yaakov has the last 17 years of his life with Yosef again, he's again come to life. So the total number of years that Yaakov has life are 34. The gematria of Vayechi. It's interesting that Yosef is considered Yaakov's top disciple. I'm sure Yaakov taught his other children. But Yosef was the one who really understood. He was able to give him the deepest secrets of the Torah because Yosef really understood. So without Yosef, he didn't have life because he couldn't have that continuum. He didn't have who to teach those depths to. He taught. Yehuda was a big Talmud Chacham. He was a big Posek. But he wasn't Yosef. Yaakov sees it's his last year, and he calls Yosef. Why does he have to call Yosef? Because Yosef's a big time politician. He's vice president. He's sitting in the Capitol. He doesn't have time to be around Yaakov. Or maybe because Yosef knows that Yaakov must be wondering, where you've been, Yosef? It's been 22 years. Let's have a talk. So Yosef stays away from his father, the same father that he loves, the same father that he hasn't seen for 22 years. Now the next 17 years, when he's taking care of his father and his family, Yosef will learn with his father, but he will avoid close contact. He won't live next to his father. He won't have time to sit down for tea. He won't have time to come over for a Shabbos meal, because Yosef wants to avoid a situation where his father might ask him, hey, Yosef, tell me a little bit, what happened? Sometimes the greatest kibbutz of the aim is to maintain a distance. The Marami Rutenberg was a big Talmud Chacham, chief rabbi, the Rebbe of the Rosh, and his father didn't respect him. His father treated him like a little kid. And the Maram knew that every time his father is treating him that way, his father is in essence sinning. The fact that the person is your son doesn't mean he's not a Talmud Chacham. So the Maram Rutenberg stayed away from his father. He was in a different town and he wouldn't come to visit, because if they're in public and his father tells him, "Mayor, stand up straight," and everyone hears it, his father just sinned. He disgraced the Talmud Chacham. So on the one hand, he misses his father. On the other hand, he knows when he's there, anytime they're in public and his father treats him like he's a little kid, he's causing his father to transgress. So he had no choice. The Chassam Sofer was a kid. When he hit the age of 13, he got up and gave a bar mitzvah drasha. He learned by Rav Nosson Adler. And in his bar mitzvah drasha, he quoted something his grandfather said, and then he went on to disprove what his grandfather had said. He went on to explain why he thinks his grandfather was wrong. His father went up to the podium and started beating the daylights out of him, telling him, "What kind of chutzpah kid are you saying that your grandfather was wrong?" Rav Nosson Adler, his Rebbe, pulled the Chassam Sofer away and said, "Stop hitting the kid. He's right. What he said is right. He's right, the grandfather was wrong." But he recognized that if he leaves the Chassam Sofer by his father, he's never going to grow to be a great Torah sage. Because anytime he's going to try to say something that his father doesn't think is right, he's going to beat him. So he took him and took him to his academy, and he made sure that he wasn't home too much. He basically adopted the Chassam Sofer, grew up by his Rebbe, Rav Nosson Adler, more than he grew up at home. Rav Nosson Adler made his home available to the Chassam Sofer. Sometimes we have to know what's the best respect for our parents. It's very convenient to maintain close contact with them, but we have to know what's best for them also and what's best for us. Could you imagine what Yosef must have felt like? He hasn't seen his father. And now, why is he staying away from his father? To protect his brothers. They did something wrong. Why does he have to pay the price? In life, it doesn't work that way. We have responsibilities. Yeah. And even when we don't do what's wrong, we still have to be careful not to say Lashon Hara, to speak badly about others. So Yosef spends the next 17 years where he's never going to have a free Shabbos meal with his father, just talking freely. And now it's his father's last year. Yeah. Many say it. It's Rabbi Yeshua ibn Shuib says it, but others say it too. You could see it in the notes you have before you. So Yaakov calls Yosef in and he tells him, "I want you to do with me chesed ve'emet." Every chesed that we do, we're entitled to think maybe I'll get something back for it. If I do something nice to you, it's fair for me to assume that you'll do something nice to me. The only time you could assume you're never getting anything back is when you do something with the deceased. He's never paying you back. Chazal say that's called chesed shel emet, kindness that's true. And people are always trying, vying for that mitzvah. When we take the body to be buried, you'll notice that the pious people are always trying to be the ones to carry the coffin. Why? Because that's an act of true kindness. You're never getting payback for that. So you guys should know, because sometimes you go to funerals where the funeral director takes the coffin. So you could take the coffin. You could tell them, "I'm sorry, do you mind if I take it?" They wheel it nowadays. Very often, when you have people who don't know much, sometimes I've been at funerals where no one volunteered to take the coffin. So they put it on a wagon and they started wheeling the wagon. So I went over to the funeral director and I said, "Can I wheel the wagon?" He said, "Sure." He has no right to take that mitzvah from us. The custom has always been among the Jewish people that the crowd honors the deceased and vies for the mitzvah of carrying the coffin. So if you're at a funeral and they're wheeling the body, so you could take that mitzvah. That's called chesed shel emet. If they're carrying, then you could also join in carrying.
Is there an idea?
I don't know, all kinds of things that's beyond me. We'll discuss a little bit of it as we continue. So Yaakov asks him, take me out of Egypt. And we all know Rashi. As you guys know, our condition for this class is, if you prepare with Rashi, I could do the other Rishonim. So I assume you guys also Rashi. If I'm mistaken, let me know, and then next week we'll do only Rashi. And you got to know Rashi. Rashi comes first, guys. If we're going to do the other Rishonim and Midrashim, you guys have to prepare with Rashi. Because first is Rashi. If you know Rashi, then it's worth doing the other Rishonim. But Rashi comes first, so you guys got to know that Rashi says because Mitzrayim would turn into the Kinim, and because he didn't want to go through the underground tunnels in the time of Trias HaMesim, you got to know Rashi. I'm assuming you guys know Rashi. He didn't want Mitzrayim to make him into an Avodah Zarah. He had many reasons, Rashi quotes, why he didn't want to be buried in Mitzrayim. So Yaakov asks him, take me up to the land of Israel. Put your hand under my thigh in vow that you will take me out of Mitzrayim. The pasuk never says he did. Seems Yosef was reluctant to put his hand under his father's thigh. So his father says, okay, promise me. So he promises. And when he promises, Yaakov bows to the head of the bed. And we have on tradition that when a person is ill, the Shekhinah is resting at the head of his bed. So a person doesn't have to run out to Minyan. Sometimes people are deathly ill, and the doctor says, you have to rest. And an oncology patient will say, no, I need every merit I can. I'm going to go out to shul. No, your mitzvah, a person's mitzvah, if he's ill, is to get better. And if what he needs in order to get better is to be in bed, he should be in bed. And if it's any comfort to him, then the halacha says that the Shekhinah is right there with him. Hashem yisadenu al eres divai. God supports the sick even when they're on the verge of death. So that's halacha. We say when you visit someone who's sick, don't sit higher than their bed, because the Shekhinah is right above their bed, and that's why Yaakov bows towards the head of his bed. Why does Yaakov have to make him promise? So firstly, he knew Paro might detain him. It's a big honor if you could say, I have Yaakov Avinu buried in my land. From the time Yaakov came to Egypt, people stopped having toothache, women stopped miscarrying. They knew they wanted Yaakov there. So Yaakov was concerned. They're going to want to leave his body there. Maybe Paro will say, I'm willing to let the other brothers go. You, Yosef, you don't go. And he knew he needed Yosef coming along because he knew there was a threat that Esav would gather his forces. Esav still had 34 years left to live. So he knew there was a danger, or 33 years left to live. He knew there was a danger that Esav would gather his forces and say, no, I'm not giving you the last plot left in the family burial plot. He needed Yosef to come with his men. And we have, it says in Josephus, there was a world war then. Esav did gather his men and did gather forces, and there was a war in the procession to bury Yaakov Avinu. Yosef brought the Egyptian army and other armies came, and it wasn't simple to get Yaakov to the land of Canaan to bury him. And he also knew that Yosef could easily say to himself, when my mother died, he didn't even spend the half a day to travel and bury her in the burial plot where he'll be buried. Now I'm supposed to travel weeks worth of journey with an army to bury him where he wants. He didn't, for my mother, he didn't even spend half a day. It was less than a half a day's journey to get to the Maros HaMachpelah from where he was at. So, So Yaakov tells him, promise me. And Yosef does promise. It gets nearer. Yaakov's closer to dying. And Yosef gets word that his father is ill. Who does he get word from? One of his children. His children were learning by Yaakov Avinu. An intelligent person has his children learning by the grandparents, not only by the parents. If you have grandparents who can teach them Torah, then that's a big merit. Chazal tell us, Kol hamlamed es ben beno Torah. Whoever teaches his grandchildren Torah, it's as though he got it from Sinai. When my wife's grandparents come, that's my kid's great-grandparents, I try to grab every opportunity to be there for Shabbos so my children will see their great-grandparents. When you have a lineage, when you have family, and you could show your children, look, your grandfather keeps Torah, your great-grandfather keeps Torah, you're showing them tradition. You're showing them the links in the chain. When you have that, it's invaluable. If you have the contrary, if you have a situation where your parents or grandparents are not reflective of Torah values, are not in keeping with the Torah lifestyle, so then obviously the effect can be reversed, so you got to be careful what you do. But you could also get them Torah stories, and when they visit your house, you could get them easy English books that they could read the kids, and they could teach them things on the parsha. They don't have to read them Goldilocks. They could read them Samson. They could read them Daniel in the Lion's Den. There are good Jewish stories. Don't let them bring the Christian edition. Get a Jewish edition. Get a Jewish book, and you give them the books to give the kids as gifts or to read with the kids. So Yosef's children were by the grandfather. They were by Yaakov. So now they come back and they tell Yaakov. Ephraim comes and tells Yosef, "Dad, you should know grandfather's sick." So Yosef comes. When Yosef comes, Yaakov strengthens himself to honor Yosef. We have to honor the authorities, even if they're our own kids. Yaakov's the father. Yosef has a mitzvah kibud av v'aim. But now Yosef's the vice president. So Yaakov sits up in the bed in honor of Yosef. Yaakov tells Yosef, "You should know God promised me the land of Israel. And your two children, Ephraim and Menashe, are going to have a double portion in the land of Israel, because I'm going to consider them like two tribes." According to some commentaries, the brothers sold Yosef because they were concerned that he would take extra portions. He was the firstborn from Rachel. He was the one who snitched on Reuven. He tattletaled. He told Yaakov, "Reuven switched the beds," and then he caused Reuven to lose his rights to a double portion. So what they do? They sold him down to Egypt. That was part of their calculation, according to some. You see, sometimes in life, God shows us that when you try to take something away from someone, God can go full circle. It's right now 36 years later. But because he had two kids, he suffered everything, and at the end of the day, he's still getting the double portion. And then he tells Yosef, "Look, you were a little boy when your mother passed away. I was traveling. I had the whole family with me. I had a lot of cattle with me. I was a newcomer to the land of Israel. I didn't have strength. I didn't have political clout yet. And Esav was still living around here. And then Rachel died. I had a bunch of little kids to take care of. I had a newborn baby. She died during childbirth. And I had her body that was bleeding profusely. I know it was a half a day's journey to bury her, but it wouldn't have been respectful to her. To start carrying her body, it would have taken much longer than a half a day. And that heat, with all the children, with all the cattle, to take her for a proper burial, I didn't have a choice. And you know what? I had a prophecy. God told me that when the children of Israel are exiled, so then they're going to be exiled directly going through the path of her burial plot. And when no one else will be able to speak before God on behalf of the Jewish people, she will be able to speak before God. She's going to make the strong claim for the Jewish people when the Jews are exiled from the first temple, as the prophet Jeremiah tells us in Yirmiyahu, Rachel mevakal banea. So even though I you might hold it against me, but you have to understand there was reasoning behind it. Yaakov asks Yosef, "Who are they?" Yosef says, "They are my kids." Yaakov says, yeah. "Who are they?" And Yosef takes out the ksuba and shows him how he married her. That he married a Jewish girl and the children come from a kosher marriage. People sometimes don't take the concept of marriage seriously. Every so often I get a phone call that says, "I'm getting married this week, Rabbi. Could you officiate the wedding?" It doesn't work that way. You're getting married. It's a serious thing. Check out that the girl's Jewish. Who told you she's Jewish? You know, often we have situations that guys get married and then we discover the girl isn't Jewish. Or the guy isn't Jewish. You're dating a person. She tells you, "I'm Russian, but I'm telling you I'm from a Jewish family." Okay, why don't we check? I've had situations where we were standing at the wedding hall and the guy was a Kohen, and the rabbi asks him, "Where's the validation that she's Jewish?" And he says, "We're standing there. They're supposed to go to the chuppah in 10 minutes. And where's the validation that you as a Kohen can marry her?" "I think I took care of it. I think I have the papers." True stories. I'm not making any of this up. I was there. And I told the guy, months beforehand, when he got engaged, before he got engaged, I told him, "You're dating a girl? Fine. She's from Russia. Beautiful. Get all the papers. Verify. We know that from Russia it's hard to get verification that a person's Jewish. I told them before you date her, verify. But of course, that didn't happen. We reached the chuppah and I asked him. He said, yeah, I took care of it. Everything's taken care of. Everything's taken care of. We reached the chuppah. Nothing's taken care of. This is the future of your family. It's also an isser of Yaharik Valyavar. You guys know that to marry a non-Jewish woman is Yaharik Valyavar. It's an isser like Arias, like marrying one's sister. For a Jewish man to marry a non-Jewish woman is Yaharik Valyavar. Open up Shulchan Aruch. You have to marry a Jewish woman, and you have to verify that she's Jewish. And you have to verify that the wedding's kosher. So that means that you have to know that the witnesses are kosher people, they keep mitzvot, and you have to verify that you have a kosher ksuba. So Yaakov Avinu, when he's coming to bless Yosef's children, says, now that I'm going to bless them, one second, show me the validation of your marriage. Bring me your ksuba. Yes?
If she was not a convert, then how does the family
have to? That's complex. Not for now. Bottom line, they got married. They're Baruch Hashem happily married, I hope. I mean, he still calls me up every so often. Everything seems fine. But it was complicated. We stopped the preparations for the wedding and asked everyone to sing, and we started making phone calls. It wasn't simple. But it was wrong of him to bring it to such a situation. You guys, you're dating a girl, verify that she's Jewish. Just because she has an online name of Ariella doesn't mean she's Jewish. Maybe her father is Israeli. That doesn't prove she's Jewish. So that's not for now. Yaakov Avinu tells him, just remember, I buried your mother in the portion of her children. That's her honor. And it was her honor not to take her around when she was bleeding profusely. That's what caused her death. She died at childbirth. Yaakov tells him, you know, I didn't even expect to see you. I had given up hope on seeing you. And God blessed me, I saw even your children. It's important that we recognize our blessings. At this moment, Yaakov Avinu could have said, oh, Yosef, 22 years I didn't have you. 22 years I spent in mourning because I thought I lost you. It's not Yaakov's focus. Yaakov's focus is, I never dreamt I'd see you, and I see your children. Yaakov Avinu places his hand on the children to bless them. We have a custom on Friday night. It's a Yekish custom. Other people have adopted that we bless the children and we say Yaakov's blessing. Yisimcha Elokim ki Ephraim v'chim nashe. We place our hands on a person's head because we say the blessing comes down on him that way. That was the concept of smicha. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he gave smicha to Yoshua, put his hands on him. But the Rambam writes that isn't the smicha for generation. We don't do that anymore. What do we do? When the Kohanim come to bless the people, they raise their hands. They can't put their hands on everyone's head, so they raise their hands over the people as though they were putting their hands on their head to give them the blessings. Yaakov Avinu blesses the children. He says, the angel that saved me. People have to take note in their lives when God sends angels to save them. Everywhere we go, there are angels. Angels don't have to show up with wings. Angel is a messenger. And we should. There are two thoughts that my father always told me. One, take note of the angels God sends you. Recognize them. An angel doesn't have to be a Jew. An angel could be the gas attendant that gives you the right directions so you don't end up in Gaza. An angel is a messenger. And two, a person should try to be an angel in other people's lives. Every one of us can be an angel. Yeah. Okay. Okay. That's if you were here for that night that David Gruskin asked about Barchuni Leshalom Thursday night, 3 weeks ago, so then you'll understand what Rashi was saying there. The Machlokes Rishonim we can't go into now. Yaakov Avinu blesses Yosef's children. And in blessing his children, he's really blessing Yosef himself. Now, we have to recognize that. A healthy parent isn't jealous of his children. He recognizes that when it's good for them, that's really God's blessing for me. Yaakov says, I'm giving you Shechem achad al achecha, a portion, double your brothers, you're getting a second portion, as though you were firstborn, that I conquered b'chalbi u'v'kashti, with my sword and my bow, which needs a lot of explanation, but for lack of time, we won't go into that now. Yaakov wants to reveal the future, when the Mashiach is going to come. And God doesn't want him to reveal it. One of the tests of managing in this world is that we don't know the kids. When a guy's dating, and he's been dating like Yitzchak Avinu, he's already a 40-year-old man and he hasn't found his wife. If someone would tell him, don't worry, you're going to get married, it wouldn't be so tough. If someone would tell him, don't worry, you're going to have a kid. When Avraham Avinu was 69 and he's childless, and he and his wife, the doctors tell them, you guys can't have kids. If God would have told him at 69, you will have a child, that's already an easier test. God told me I'll have a child. The difficulty in our test is that we don't know the end. We have a general word of the prophet, Ketzam Nachoshech, God put an end to the darkness. There's always going to be a light at the end of the tunnel, but we don't know where it's going to be, and we also have to know that we have to do our own hishtadlut. Yaakov wants to reveal when the end is going to be. God says, no, you can't reveal the end. Part of the test is always that we don't know when the end is going to be. When's it going to be over? If Avraham Avinu knew that in 5 days I'm going to be off that mountain with my son Yitzhak and everything's going to be alright, so that wouldn't have been a test. The test is when a person doesn't find their shidduch and they don't know when they will. The test is when a person doesn't have a child and they don't know when they will. The test is, God forbid, when a person's in captivity and they don't know when they'll get out. But a person has to maintain that faith. I will. I don't know when, but I will. So Yaakov can't reveal. Can't reveal when it's going to be over. And he calls in his children and he starts blessing them. Again, I'm assuming you guys know Rashi, so I'm not going with Rashi. He begins with Reuven. Good question, I don't know.
Is there much more?
For sure.
Different times, especially here, it's very big.
Someone discusses it, I don't remember who. It's discussed, but I don't remember. I don't remember who says what. I don't remember. Yaakov calls his children, he says, gather, and I will tell you, if you unify, that is what will hold you till the end of time. Reuven, you are my firstborn. You are my first strength. Chazal tell us that Yaakov Avinu never spilt seed. A young bachelor once came to Rav Moshe Feinstein to discuss with him the concept of carry. So Rav Moshe said, look, when a person isn't married, Chazal said, it's normal that sometimes things happen. A person is responsible to keep his thoughts pure. And Chazal say, if a person doesn't think improper thoughts by day, then he won't have a wet dream by night. But on the other hand, Chazal tell us that Yaakov Avinu was exceptional. He could say, Reishisoni, this is the first time I gave seed, you, Reuven. Everyone else didn't say that. Meaning, it's normal for a person, every so often that happens. But a person has to watch himself. It shouldn't happen often. A person is supposed to ensure that his thoughts during the day are proper, so he won't come to doing something improper at night. It's a biblical prohibition. But at the end of the day, the fact that it happens is normal. Yaakov says, you're Reishitoni, you're my first strength. Yeter se'et, Yaakov Avinu tells him, I wish you that God should carry your sin away with greater strength. You should get complete forgiveness for what you did wrong. V'yeter az, because in truth your sin was with great brazenness, with great chutzpah. You come in and you take my bed and you interfere where I put my bed. That's big chutzpah. He wasn't a little boy. So Yaakov Avinu tells him, on the one hand, you sinned greatly. On the other hand, I wish you that God gives you great forgiveness. Yeah?
It's still hard to understand Yaakov's move. Isn't it like the most insulting thing?
I know it's going back. People are shocked. Right? So we can't do that now. We got 20 minutes left. Sorry. We can't. You were out in England when we did it. Pachas Kamayim, but it's online. Maybe last year we dealt with it more than this year. Yaakov Avinu wishes him that he should have complete forgiveness. He lost three levels for what he did. He lost the right to the throne. He lost the right to a double portion, the right to the firstborn. And he lost the right to kahuna. He would have been Kohen Gadol, but he lost all that. So he paid a hefty price. But Yaakov Avinu prays that he should be forgiven. Shimon and Levi, you guys had too much anger. And that's not something that belongs by us using these weapons. Klei chamas mecherotehim. What does he say? Arur apam. What does the word arur mean? Arur means lacking. I pray that God should remove from their anger, for it is way too strong. The evratam, and their internal anger should be spread. I will scatter it through Yaakov. We know that the tribe of Yehuda, their portion was enveloped within the portion of the tribe of Shimon was enveloped within Yehuda, and the tribe of Levi was scattered throughout Israel. It's like a sharp spice. You scatter it throughout a broth, so it's good. If you have it condensed in one place, it's too sharp. So Yaakov says, your anger is good when it's scattered. It will help the communities when you have a little bit of Levim here and there and a little bit of Shimon here and there. At the end, Yaakov Avinu says, you guys could carry my bed, but don't let your kids carry my bed, because you guys all married Canaanite girls, and you're my grandchildren, I don't want them touching my bed. And you, Shimon and Levi, stay away. Don't touch my bed after what you did. Shimon and Levi start begging. Dad, please forgive us. We didn't ask you. We fought a war. We endangered the family. And they beg for forgiveness, and finally Yaakov forgives them. It's interesting. You have two huge tzaddikim, Shimon and Levi. You have two huge tzaddikim who have been thinking of how to repent for quite a while. But it's only in their father's last moments when he tells them, kids, you don't touch my bed. It's only then that they get the push to move forward and say, and get full mechila from their father. Maybe that teaches us something. When difficult things happen, a person is supposed to stop and think, wait a second, what am I supposed to do tshuva? And if that's what pushes him to do tshuva, so what? At the end of the day, he did tshuva. You see, Shimon and Levi, that's how they made it back up there. At the end, they do carry the bed. And the implications had they not carried the bed would have been very great. But maybe we'll get to that. We'll see if time allows. Yehuda, he blesses him with kingship, that Mashiach will come from him, that the heads of the Jewish people in Babylon, they were descendants from Yehuda through their fathers. The Nesim in Israel, they were descendants from Yehuda through their mothers. Yehuda's going to lead the Jewish people. And so Yaakov goes on and blesses each tribe. He tells Yehuda, you saved from being devoured. You saved Yosef from being devoured by the brothers. And so he merited to have Daniel, who was saved from the lion's den. He merited to have Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, who were saved from the burning furnace, because he saved Tamar from being thrown into a burning furnace. So he tells him, you rescued people from being killed, so too your offsprings will be rescued. You are going to have the leaders until we reach Shiloh. According to some commentaries, according to one opinion in the Gemara, Shiloh is going to be the name of Mashiach. Shiloh. Not Menachem Mendel. Are different Gemaras. That's what this Gemara says. No. Our Gemara is that way. There's a Marsha that way. But there's the Gemara. There's a Gemara that says Shiloh. There's a Gemara that says Yinon. There are many Gemaras. There's whatever. There are many places. Okay, whatever all them mean. We don't know. What? Yeah, okay. Yehuda, what does Yehuda mean? Will cause to be modeh. Ata yoducha achecha. You will cause your brothers to think. The whole name Yehuda is one who causes others to give thanks. Shiloh is also gematria Moshe. He tells him, you're going to lead the way till Shiloh. Till Moshe Rabbeinu comes to the scene, he's going to gather the Jewish people, and he's not from Yehuda. Lo yosur shevet mi Yehuda. The leadership will remain with Yehuda. we find that any leader that came on the Jewish people who wasn't from Yehuda didn't last. King Saul was from the tribe of Benjamin, even though Yaakov prophesies it's going to happen, but his throne didn't last. His dynasty didn't last. The Hasmonean kingdom began, but our sages say they didn't last. They were even killed out. And their sin was that they held on to the throne. They should have held on to their rights as Kohanim, but not to the throne. Ad ki yavo Shiloh, when will you get back? When Shiloh is destroyed. When Shiloh was destroyed, that's when King David was chosen, and that's when the Davidic dynasty began. Yaakov continues, and in his blessings, he really refers to the shoftim from each tribe, and he refers to the blessings of the land of Israel that each tribe would get. He says that Yehuda and his portion, there's going to be a tremendous amount of wine. Chachlili enayim miyayin. Okay, that's the Seder. In Yehuda's blessing, we never find the letter Zion. Zion means armor. The tribe of Yehuda doesn't need armor. Even though they're the greatest warriors, Hashem is the one that's fighting for them when the Jewish people do what they're supposed to. And his name, Yehuda, is really Yud Kei Vav Kei with the Dalet, because he is the fourth son. Yehuda is the fourth son. Zevulun comes before Yisachar. Yisachar and Zevulun had a partnership. Zevulun would do business and he'd support Yisachar. Now while Zevulun was doing business, he was also learning Torah. Chazal tell us that when you have a partnership like this, the guy who's doing business comes first. He's held on a higher pedestal. You'd think the guy who's learning Torah comes first. Chazal say no. Even in the blessings, who comes first? Zevulun. There is a halacha. Every Jew must learn Torah. If a person can learn Torah most of the day, great. If a person can learn Torah on a higher level, great. If a person can't learn Torah on a high level, he should learn on a lower level. If he has to work to make a living, he still has to learn Torah. If a person can, he should learn Torah. If he cannot learn Torah, he still should learn Torah, but with his spare money, he should support others that learn Torah. That doesn't mean that he doesn't have an obligation to learn Torah. He still has an obligation to learn Torah. But if he's busy making a living, so he should at least take some of his money and support others. And there are special contracts called Yisachar Zvulun contracts that are quoted in Halacha, just like Yisachar and Zvulun had a deal. They were partners in the business, and then they wrote up in the contract that in the world to come, they'd be partners in the world to come. Now, we could make contracts that way. I mean, there are things that we could do that affect the world to come. The story is quoted on a different vein, that a Gentile once walked into a bar or someplace where a tavern where a Jew was ill. He was lying in bed sick, and the Gentile was betting, and he lost his money. And he said, "Shucks, I need more money to continue betting." So he looks at the Jew in the corner, and the Jew tells him, "I'll give you 10 kopek if you buy my sickness from me." So he says, "Sure, what do I care?" So he gives him the money. And the next day the Gentile died and the Jew got up and was better from his illness. So it's quoted in Halacha, don't play that game. Meaning if someone's sick and he offers you, take some money and if you take my illness, so don't take the money. It's brought in Halacha, one should not do that. But we see that there are ways that we could affect things up above. I mean, there are ways we could do it. One could sell portions in his world to come, and that's really what happens. There's a lot to discuss about that, but not a lot of time. Yeah. Good question. Right now we'll live with what we know, and what we don't know we'll leave for a different time. I think it's a Gemara in Pesachim. I have to look it up. But it's in the Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Talmud Torah. In the very beginning of Hilchos Talmud Torah. Maybe Resh Mem Beis. And you are there, around Resh Mem Beis. In Yehuda's blessing was Ulven Shinayim Mechalav. He'll have red eyes from wine. He'll have a lot of wine. And he'll have white teeth from milk. Chazal say, this Pasuk also teaches us another concept. Ulven shinayim, if you whiten your teeth, if you show someone else the white of your teeth, it's as though you've given them milk, it's as though you've supported them. The fact that you smile at someone, that you greet someone with a warm countenance, gives them such sustenance, it's as though you fed them. Very often, we're willing to give someone money, but we won't give him from our smile, from our care. Chazal said quite the contrary. When you give him spiritual sustenance, you're giving him a lot. You might be even giving him more than if you'd given him the milk and the bread. Chazal say, "You leven shinayim lechalav." How much does it cost us to smile, to show our teeth to someone that walks into the room? Chazal say, "You leven shinayim lechalav." You show him the white of your teeth. It's like you fed him, you've given him to drink, you've taken good care of him. Yisachar is described as a donkey. A donkey that's carrying the load. Learning Torah isn't easy. It's carrying a load. A donkey goes day and night and he rests. He's not resting at home. A person wants to learn Torah, has to travel. He has to come out from California to Machon Meir. He has to go from Susia to Machon Meir. It's not easy. To come to Machon Meir means sometimes you're not going to sleep at home. You're not going to have the warm bed. You're not going to have the warm room. Sometimes you can have a room that's overheated because the other guys want it. You're not going to be your own boss. Yeah, you're like that donkey. He's traveling. He doesn't have his own domain. But, guys, you could smile. Huh? We could throw a few jokes, right? But at the end of the day, that's Yisachar. That's Yisachar, carrying the load of Torah. Now, when we deal with the toils of learning Torah, so Vayal Menucha, he saw that rest gives him Kitov, gives him Torah. When it comes to worldly toils, you want to be a businessman, so you got to run, you got to do business, and you could go on less sleep. When it comes to learning Torah, and many of you have already experienced this, suddenly you see you need more sleep if you want to catch the Gemara well. You want to really understand the depths of the Gemara, you got to sleep well. Vayal Menucha, Yisachar saw that by resting Kitov, then he gets Torah. It's not like doing business. You wanna succeed in other things? Yeah, there, if you sleep less, you'll succeed more. And Torah doesn't work that way. There's a certain amount of sleep that you need, and less than that, you're being less successful. For every 3 hours you learn when you're tired, said the Netziv, you'd accomplish the same in 1 hour if you were awake and sharp. One of the greatest challenges people have when they come to learn Torah is recognizing that they need sleep. This isn't college. College, when I was there, believe me, I did it on less sleep. You don't need as much sleep. It's not as much. You don't need as much. You're not using as much of your brain. You're learning Torah, so you need more sleep. It's not going to work any other way. One of the things we say in davening is, Hashiva shofteinu kevarishona, v'yotzeinu kevatchila. Bring us back our judges, bring us back our advisors, bring us back the great sages. V'aser mimenu yagon v'anachar. Remove from us the toil, the sighing, because it goes hand in hand. You want to have great sages, then you need a certain amount of peace to be able to learn properly. You can't attain true levels of Torah unless you're at rest. The Rambam writes that about himself as well. Yisachar is described as Vayet Shichmo. He tilted to carry the load of Torah. A person wants to learn Torah, he has to have modesty. He has to put himself down a little bit. It's not going to work if a person is proud. Torah is acquired with modesty. Vayhi Lemasoved, he was taxed. He was a public servant. You think to be a rabbi is any great shakes? Yeah, spiritually, but at the end of the day, you're a public servant. That's what Yisachar is. He's serving the Jewish people. And what happens when you make a mistake? You got to pay for that mistake. You don't just walk home and say, okay, what can I do? I made a mistake. No. Yisachar had to pay out of pocket when he made a mistake. He said, this isn't kosher. They sold animals being not kosher. He went back to the Beis Medrash. They told him, no, that was kosher. He had to go back to the person who he gave him the ruling and tell him, you know, I made a mistake. I owe you the money for that animal. I ruled the animal wasn't kosher. You sold it at a cheap price. Now I got to pay you back. Yaakov Avinu continues praying. He prays tribe after tribe. He prays about Yosef. We're going to skip to the end of the parasha for lack of time. Yaakov Avinu concludes his blessings and he says, children, please bury me in the land of Israel. And the question is, what's a vow worth in this day and age? Yaakov makes Yosef take a vow. Why does he have to hold on to a vow? He's a Noahide. Noahides have to keep their vows. So some say that this is an extension of the concept of Birkat Hashem. Just like a Noahide is prohibited from cursing, blaspheming, so too he must maintain a vow that he makes in God's name. There is such an opinion, but that needs work. Yaakov says, I'm passing away, bury me in that cave, the cave that Avram purchased, and he gives them the contract, which Esav signed and said that he's giving over the Maharsa Machpelah to Yaakov. Yaakov purchased it from Esav. Yaakov tells them, you should know that someone else is going to pick up where I left off these blessings, that someone else is Moshe. And there are a lot of correspondences in Chazal between Yaakov and Moshe, but we don't have time for that now. Yaakov passes away and he leaves them instructions how to carry him surrounding his bed. The way he tells the tribes to be organized is the way the tribes will be organized in the desert, which correspond to the constellations and the forces within the Jewish people. Yaakov Avinu, our sages say he didn't pass away. This concept that he didn't pass away, like Eliyahu didn't pass away, like we say Chanoch didn't pass away, like the Gemara says Rebbe didn't pass away, these are secret concepts that need work. There are 10 things that we learn from Yaakov's death. We learn that when a person feels like his time is coming close to an end, he's supposed to give directions to his children. We learn that a person has a mitzvah to do what the person who was about to be deceased told him to do. We have a mitzvah to listen to a person who's lying on his deathbed. The third point we learn is that a person should try to be buried in the land of Israel. Even Dina was brought back and buried in Arbel next to Nitai HaArbeli here in Israel. The fourth thing is a person should try to be buried with his family. There are halachos about when a woman passes away, if she wants to be buried next to her father, can her husband say, I want? If after she passes away he marries a second wife, who does he get buried next to? All of this is discussed in halacha because spiritually a person should be buried with one's family. The fifth point is that we're supposed to honor the deceased. This isn't an animal that passed away. This isn't a carcass. This is a human being. And so we carry the person on our shoulder. We don't take the person by horseback. We honor the deceased and we carry the coffin on our shoulder. The sixth point is that we accompany the deceased to be buried. And then the seventh point is that we weep and we eulogize. Chazal said 7 days for eulogy, 3 days for weeping. The eighth point is that we mourn the deceased. The ninth point is that a person should be comforted. If a person mourns beyond this, he's saying, I have more compassion than God. God obviously said the person had to die, so we're supposed to cry over the person's passing. But to a point, Chazal directed us, what's the normal point? And the tenth point is that a person should be buried in simple clothing. Yosef was the chassid. Yosef, 17 years his father supported him, 17 years he supported his father, the last 17 years of his father's life. He was always paying back, he always kept equal. A righteous person never wants to be on the receiving end. Rav Dessler says that's the whole concept of Avodas Hashem. Am I a giver or a taker? In all of life we have to think, am I receiving or giving? And a person should always want to maintain a balance. A person has to be able to receive. On the other hand, he has to want to give and figure out ways of giving. The parasha ends, and Sefer Bereishis ends with the burial of Yaakov, and we mentioned that there was a world war. We don't have time to discuss that, but you could see it in Josephus and in Yosef Ben Gurion. Yosef ends off by telling the Jewish people, "Pakod yifkod," God will redeem you. Pakod could also mean there will be lacking. There will be lacking from yifkod, meaning God said it will be 400 years. It's not 400 years. So the Jews knew not to evaluate 400 years. And something else happens, which we'll discuss next week. Some of the Jews try to calculate when are they supposed to leave Egypt. Yosef's grandchildren, the tribe of Ephraim, they think they figured it out. And they get together and they want to leave. And when they leave, they get murdered. All of them are killed. They leave a few years ahead of time. They do the calculation from the time of the prophecy. And the calculation, they do 30 years ahead of time. The prophecy was when Avram was 70 years old, and the account begins when Yitzchak was born, 30 years later. So they leave 30 years ahead of time, and they all get killed. Yosef gives them the code, Pakod Pakati, two terms of redeeming. The one who will come back and tell you these two terms of redemption, he is the true redeemer. And when Moshe Rabbeinu will come onto the scene in next week's parasha, Moshe will come with that code, Pakod Pakati. God says, I've redeemed, with the double terminology, Pakod Pakati. And this remains on tradition, and next week we'll discuss who had this tradition. Who knew to verify that Moshe was for real? That is Hashem next week.